Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, how you doing? It's Steve. Welcome to Thursday. Chuck Todd coming up. Are we gonna? I don't know if we're gonna have Pat Brady on or not. Pat Brady's got a very difficult Thursday. He's at the Masters. Oh no.
I'm hearing Pat Brady will not be joining us today.
I'm not sure he's aware of that. He texted me in the middle of the night suggesting a topic. So you may, Sandberg, you may not want to take his call. Just pretend we're not in today. But Eric Adelson will be on. Pat Brady may insist on being on. And who am I to stop him? Dean Richards after 8 o'clock, of course. Very cool story about saving a school in the in a difficult neighborhood. We'll get into it after 9. And a lot to talk about in the top 6 at 6, which starts now.
Time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top 6 at 6.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
6.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is 6.
The top 6 at 6 on 720 WGN.
The president yesterday spoke with the leader of Jordan at his side. And... talked about a larger role in Syria, and listen, I really don't even blame Donald Trump for this, and as you know, I blame a couple things on him. He doesn't speak English, and the president needs to speak English. I'll play a couple examples of this later in the show, but he essentially committed, in the world's view, the United States to acting on Syria when he said something about, oh, they crossed a lot of lines. Is this a red line? No, no, they crossed a lot of lines with me. Those little subtle things, which may not be a big deal in big deal around the world from here. But the regular notion that came up this week, and Andre, I think you'd be behind this, is we just blow Assad's palaces to smithereens. Mm-hmm. I think you said this off the air to me. Give him the Saddam Hussein treatment.
We did say that. Remember, we said we have to directly go in and do exactly what we did with Saddam Hussein, because also chilling, Steve, is that Trump isn't criticizing Russia at all on any of this, or even offering any of our strategy.
How dare you? How dare you criticize Russia?
Right.
Next. Oh, well, we got a paper again? We have got to get more paper. Obamacare is still in the news, believe it or not. But here's the deal. There's going to be not a lot of action in Congress. Now, you're saying, Steve, what are you talking about, not a lot of action? That place is always buzzing. Not a lot of action in Congress, because ask me where the Congress members of Congress, men and women, are going.
Where are the new members of Congress, men and
women,
going?
They're taking a break. Taking a break. Yeah, they need a break.
Much needed.
They're heading home for a two-week Easter break, I believe, today, though they may pretend they're still there tomorrow. They take cardboard cutouts of themselves and they put them up, so in case you're flipping through it, you stop on C-SPAN for a second, you'll think they're still there. Next. Oh, it's going to be busy at Mar-a-Lago this weekend. And at some point during the meeting, expect the president to say, yeah, I'm going to run out and just get something to drink, and then he's going to go play 18. Because the president of China doesn't play golf, but he is in town at Mar-a-Lago to have the first face-to-face with President Trump. This could go very well, especially if China wants to do a business deal with our president. This could also go horrifically wrong. Mm-hmm. So expect there to be a lot of news today, and just really... I hope either Reince Priebus or somebody is standing right next to the president, so if he says something really, really damaging, maybe you could just grab him and throw him to the ground. Have Secret Service actually throw themselves on the president to protect the president from himself. It's just a thought. Next. Anybody see the Pepsi commercial?
No, I have not seen this one.
Kendall Jenner, and I don't blame Kendall Jenner for this. Kendall Jenner, she's like the Kim Kardashian replacement now, right? She's 20, 21, and a beautiful young girl, and she's now stepping into the, I'm going to have to take a lot of naked pictures of myself spot, because Kim's getting older and she's got a couple of kids. So Pepsi hires her to do this culture change commercial. where there's a protest going on, and she's walking through the protest. She has a blonde wig, and then she takes the blonde wig off, and she walks across this plaza where the protest is going on, and she walks up to a flanks of police officers, and she pulls out a Pepsi and hands it to them, and everybody's happy.
I did see it. It was very awkward.
Yeah, yeah. Pepsi's pulled the commercial. They've been getting killed on social media. The general premise of the commercial is all you need to solve a social problem is give everybody a Pepsi.
And it kind of stole
kind
that,
of bad timing.
Yeah, and it kind of stole that thing from Black Lives Matter, where they remember during those protests, a black person gave a Coke or a Pepsi to a police officer. Happened in real life.
I think
life.
That's where it came from. I think that's where the idea came from. Kendall Jenner's very upset. At least her spokespeople are telling her she's upset. And the Pepsi folks say, well, what, we didn't mean to offend. We tried something. It didn't work. We're sorry. We're pulling it. So, bad week for Pepsi. Next. Dave mentioned this. I mentioned the Masters, and Dave mentioned this in sports. Dustin Johnson fell down some stairs. He is probably not going to be able to play today. But, Dave, doesn't he have the last tee time?
He does. 1 o'clock our time, 2 o'clock Eastern time. No word yet today on how he's doing. They were going to wait and see how he felt this morning. He's on anti-inflammatories. They basically immobilized him yesterday after the accident. So they're saying they're optimistic he's going to be able to play. We'll see. We know how difficult a back injury can be, and especially how many times have we heard this story, Steve, related to, you name it, Tiger Woods would be sure. The first example. Yeah, he's on anti-inflammatories. He's hoping to play. But then you get out there on the practice range and you just can't swing the club.
And yeah, anybody who's ever had...
I think we all picked him too, didn't we?
Yes, yes. So you have to change that pick before the first balls are in the air. So consider yourselves warned. Mm-hmm. But anybody that's ever had a low back issue playing golf, you know how it feels.
You can't
swing a golf club. And if you're playing at the highest level and he's the world number one on a windy, windy, windy weekend in Augusta, there are holes where you got to let it rip. Not that he has a subtle swing anyway.
No.
So based on what we've heard, nobody's actually seen him, but based on what we've heard, I don't know how he plays, but you never know. He may come back fine from this, and I hope it's just a simple fall because he's got sort of a spotty past when it comes to trouble.
He does, but it sounds like he had already been over at Augusta before the par three got washed out. And look, he's what is he, 6'4", I think?
Yeah.
So he's got a long way to go if he falls, and he landed on his lower back.
And then finally this. Don't know how to tell you this other than just to tell you this. Stay off Lakeshore Drive. You got 20 to 25-foot waves, as much as 60-mile-an-hour gusts of wind. Unless you are in a high-rise on Lakeshore Drive, on the other side, looking at all the amazing waves, stay off Lakeshore Drive.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, you can get into major problems there today. The only people that should be on Lakeshore Drive are the authorities and fish.
And not only stay off Lakeshore Drive, the bike paths too, because obviously those waves are crashing over, and you still see people trying to walk or trying to jog. I wouldn't do it today.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing.
Well, I mean, the drive, it's open. I mean, Lakeshore Drive is open to drive on.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, don't go there.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, people will. I mean, don't go on a bike, definitely. Don't walk, don't run, don't
but
bike.
Don't drive on it. Just stay off it. So why would you want those kind of problems?
Steve, I have to go up Lakeshore Drive later today. Are you telling me not to do it?
I am telling you not to do it.
Okay.
I'm telling you to take the inner drive. I'm telling you to make your way maybe past the Wrigleyville, maybe take a nice stroll, cut some extra time in, cut back over to Evanston, whatever you need to do. Just don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution.
It sounds good.
What to see? What's out at the show? I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Kian's Cochrane show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Well, let's go live down to Nick DiGiulio.
I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Where are you? Are you home?
Yeah, oh yeah.
How's it going there?
You know, party central.
All right, now this Going in Style movie, you know, about once a year, you get the old actors together. Sometimes it's the old women, sometimes it's the old men. And, you know, the the previews, the trailers are almost always entertaining. You go, wow, I hope this is good, and they almost never are. This is a great cast. I hope this is funny. Is it funny?
I haven't seen it yet, and I hear really bad things about it. My colleagues who have seen it hated it. And it is a remake of a movie that I absolutely love. And I think it's weird that Zach Braff is the director. For some reason,
too.
I just find that strange. But I love the original so much that I really hope they don't completely ruin it. The original, which was Lee Strasberg, Art Carney, and George Burns from 1979, is just a tremendously entertaining and wonderful film. And, you know, I'm looking at the trailers and the scenes from this movie, and I really don't have high hopes for it. Even though, you know, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Alan Arkin, they're all national treasures. And I don't know. I've heard bad things about it, and I don't think the original need to be remade.
There is a laugh, though, in Alan Arkin running from a cop, stopping and going, I'm not admitting guilt, I'm just tired.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Alan Arkin's hilarious. I mean, all three of those guys are great. So I'm sure it won't be, you know, just because those guys are so good that they'll inevitably, you know, elevate the material that I hear is not very good.
What happened to Adam Arkin, Alan Arkin's kid?
That's a good question, man. That's so weird because I was just thinking about that the last time I saw a trailer for Going in Style. I can't remember the last thing I saw him in.
Kid got a lot of work for a long time.
He did. He was on Chicago Hope.
Yeah.
For a while, and I know he was in, you know, like 20 years ago, he was in Halloween H2O.
Oh, who doesn't remember that? Come on, please.
I remember every frame of that movie. Jamie Lee Curtis is in it, for God's sake.
Hello. Gifted, what is that?
Gifted is a Chris Evans low-key movie about a guy. He's a single man, and his sister dies, and he has to raise his young niece, who's 7 years old, and they find out that she's a genius, that she has incredible mathematical abilities, and his mother wants to take the girl and put her in a special school, but the dying wish of the little girl's mom was that she have a normal life, like she go to a regular school, she has, you know, kids around her own age. I hear really great things about this movie. It's nice to see Chris Evans doing something outside of a wacky comedy or a superhero movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's from the people who did 500 Days of Summer, which is a great movie. So I'm looking forward to this one. This is the one this weekend that I'm really looking forward to.
Is that the one you're taking your parents to?
No, we're going to see Going in Style.
Going in Style. Okay. The Assignment.
All right. I've seen this one. This is without question one of the most bizarre and craziest movies I've ever seen in my life. Now get
Come
this.
On.
By the way, it's directed by Walter Hill, one of the greatest action directors of all time. 48 Hours, The Warriors. Just, you know, you look at this guy's filmography. He's one of the best action directors that's ever lived. So that's great. But here's the plot. Are you ready for this?
I don't know.
Okay. It's about a male hitman.
Okay.
Played by Michelle Rodriguez with a beard.
Why is she wearing a beard?
Because she's a man. Like, the character is male. So it's Michelle, and they actually have a full frontal shot of Michelle Rodriguez with the equipment. Anyway.
Wait, male equipment or female equipment? Just trying to.
Male equipment.
Got it.
Male
okay.
equipment with the beard and the whole thing. So here's what happened. She's a hitman who killed Sigourney Weaver's brother. Sigourney Weaver is an insane surgeon. So in order to seek revenge on this guy who for killing her brother, she drugs this man, played by Michelle Rodriguez, and gives her a sex change gives him a sex change operation and turns her into Michelle Rodriguez without the male equipment and no beard. She wakes up, sees that she's a woman, not a man anymore, and seeks revenge on Sigourney Weaver. I'm not making that up.
You're speaking of movies that don't need to be made. That one. The one you just described.
You know why? Because it's been done so many times.
Right, the same old story. But you know, it always amazes me. We talk about process. It always amazes me when you hear something, and obviously that is as bizarre as it gets, but even something close to that bizarre, and you go, how the hell did that get out of a meeting? How are people not thrown out of an office?
Now I watched the movie. I saw it because it was available on video on demand before it hit the theaters. It'll hit the theaters Friday. But I saw it on video on demand. I watched it because I'm a Walter Hill fanatic. And I, first of all, it is mesmerizingly entertaining because it's so damn bizarre. It's so weird. And when Michelle Rodriguez is playing the male character, she just speaks in a deep voice. And Tony Shalhoub is in it, Anthony LaPaglia, and did I mention Sigourney Weaver is in this movie?
Yeah, so it's a good cast who all read the same script and somehow agreed to do it. Is that because it's Walter Hill?
I wouldn't guess it's because it's Walter Hill. And I have to say this, Steve, in some recess of the weirdness in my mind, I found the movie incredibly entertaining. I mean, it's just it's mostly due to me just shaking my head, like through the entire movie.
Right.
Like, is this
right
real?
But I think, Andre, you'd back me up on this. Mm-hmm. Nick does a very good job of reading what people will like and not like. But when Nick goes to that weird place in his brain,
yeah.
I don't think we can judge a movie by the weird place in his brain. I think we need to go to the other place.
I agree. I loved hearing that description.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It's just, and it's also shot in a weird, like, comic book kind of style, because Walter Hill's, like, obsessed with comic books. And so there's weird, like, comic book panels and swipe, you know.
Sin City kind of thing?
Yeah. And it's just, with every 10 minutes that the movie that passed while I was watching the movie, I was like, this can't get any weirder. And it just kept getting weirder. And I got to say, it's madness, but I was entertained by this movie. I mean,
is it violent? Is it violent like the new Smurfs movie?
It's not quite as gross as the new Smurfs movie.
Okay,
doesn't go
the
that
Smurfs? Far. There's a new Smurfs movie out this weekend, which again, I'm not quite sure why, but are the Smurfs still a deal? Smurfs still a big thing?
I guess yes, they are. The last Smurf movie actually bombed. I'm not sure why they made the new one, but you know what happens in this Smurfs movie?
I don't.
Papa Smurf becomes a Smurfette. I just, you know.
Oh, they did a surgery?
Did the surgery?
They switched him over?
Yeah.
And then he seeks revenge in Smurf's assignment. Rear Window at the movie, go win.
Oh, Tuesday. And get your tickets because they're flying. We don't have many left. I mean, this is what happens when you show a masterpiece. You know, when you show one of the greatest movies ever made, you get a crowd. It's only $10. Parking is free. It's going to be beautiful to look at on the big screen. It's at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont this Tuesday, the 11th. Have dinner at the restaurant beforehand. The movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it. We'll talk about it afterwards. I mean, what can you say? It's Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, and it's only $10. Parking is free, and you can go to Fandango.com, and you should get your tickets now because they're really flying, and I think we're going to sell out on this one. So,
back story and Chuck Todd coming up. Thank you, Nick. This is 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I think the Obama administration had a great opportunity to solve this crisis a long time ago when he said the red line in the sand. And when he didn't cross that line after making the threat, I think that set us back a long ways, not only in Syria, but in many other parts of the world, because it was a blank threat. I think it was something that was not one of our better days as a country. So I do feel that, Julie. I feel it very strongly. I now have responsibility, and I will have that responsibility and carry it very proudly. I will tell you that. It is now my responsibility. It was a great opportunity missed.
WGN. It's the Steve Cochran Show on this rainy Thursday. Chuck Todd from Meet the Press joins us at this time every single week. How you doing, Chuck? Morning to you.
I'm okay. Boy, it's rain everywhere. We got rain on the East Coast pretty bad, too.
Boy, no kidding. All kinds of flights canceled and delayed today. Why don't we start with President Trump? We're waiting for Steve to rejoin us here. But let's start with President Trump and his comments yesterday about the Assad regime. And the flip-flop was crazy. Earlier in the week, blaming President Obama for everything that had happened there, which in itself is crazy. And then taking a little bit of responsibility yesterday, saying, well, we're going to move ahead. We don't approve of this.
Well, look, it's the power of pictures. I mean, the pictures of those children that were poisoned with those chemical weapons is a powerful picture. And I think what we saw yesterday was the president reacting emotionally to that. I think now, though, is what do you do?
Can't hear Chuck.
And hey there. It is it is, on one hand, candidate Trump campaigned on at saying, look, we're not going to get involved. We're not going to be the world's police. We're going to get involved in all of these conflicts in the Middle East. And even at one point telling me he thinks that the Middle East would have been, it'd be more stable today with Assad staying where he is, Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and Gaddafi in Libya. But, you know, Donald Trump's not the first candidate to talk about, well, maybe we need to cut back how often we get involved militarily, to then become president and be moved by a moment like what happened in Syria. The question is, how is he going to respond? And can you do a military option without it turning into a quagmire? President Obama decided you couldn't. I'll be curious to see what President Trump decides.
So in regards to the words yesterday, we talked about this at the top of the show, and that is words matter when they come from the president, and they don't just matter to the people here. When you start talking about crossing lines, and they crossed a lot of lines, what meaning does that have for the rest of the world? Does that mean that they think we are going to do something?
I heard it as a president ready to do a military strike. Now, you know, look, President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry had the country prepared for a military strike, too. Until you start talking with the military planners, you start looking at, okay, then what do you do a week later? Then what do you do 2 weeks later? And that's when President Obama got cold feet. So, look, it did sound to me as if President Trump is ready to do something. But where his criticism of President Obama is most salient is on the issue of, hey, we don't want to, where he said President Obama made drew some lines that he didn't enforce, and that didn't work out so well either. And so that's a trap that President Trump can't fall into. You fall, if we have two presidents in a row that fall into that trap, then America's word is being questioned.
Doesn't it start with actually saying something about Russia today and tomorrow? And
well,
know China's
going to... That's the issue here. I mean, you know, the biggest violator, and Nikki Haley has said it. By the way, Nikki Haley's been very strong on Russia on this, and has said, the fault lies with Russia. Your job was to get those chemical weapons out of Syria. You clearly didn't do it. You violated the terms of this agreement. She said that. That's powerful. It's all the more powerful if President Trump says something like that.
You have the president, or the leader of China and Mar-a-Lago and Donald Trump and an ocean and a lovely weekend together. What comes out of this? Any idea?
I'll be curious. I think the front and center, you know, I imagine you're going to hear President Trump ratcheting back the trade rhetoric a little bit. But where he has leverage, I mean, if you're the Chinese and if you're Xi, the last thing you wanted this week was a North Korean missile test. Because suddenly that gives the United States leverage in a U.S.-China summit. Because at the end of the day, there's a lot of things the United States would already have done in North Korea if the Chinese would give the go sign. But they are the protectors of North Korea here. So Donald Trump enters this summit with an enormous amount of leverage on North Korea this week, hand it to him by the North Koreans. It's an opportunity to really put some pressure on China to deal with this North Korean situation. I'll be curious to see if he knows how to effectively use this leverage, because he's got it. The North Koreans handed it to him. That, to me, needs to be the biggest thing to come out of this summit.
Before I let you go, I wanted to salute you on last weekend's Meet the Press. I thought the way you skillfully exposed the hypocrisy of Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer was terrific, and I hope people caught it, because we need more of that kind of TV when it comes to politics. And
this is why the country ended up gravitating toward a guy like Donald Trump in some places, because they were tired of the double talk of the two parties lately. And this issue exposes it more cleanly than any other.
That vote goes when?
Today, sometime today, it'll happen. And literally a shrug of the shoulders, I think. Look, in 10 years, we're going to see the impact of this. It's not going to be today. It's not going to be tomorrow. But in 10 years, when the entire federal court system is essentially filled with those from the far left and the far right, and everybody goes, how come there's no moderation in our judicial system anymore?
Right. Right.
We'll look back to this these last 3 years of the United States Senate shenanigans.
Well, nice work by you, Chuck. You got a plug for Sunday or MTP Daily?
Well, we're still seeing what we can confirm publicly, but we're going to have a little bit of a foreign policy focus with both Syria and North Korea front and center.
Appreciate the time, as always. That's Chuck Todd. He is your moderator of the longest-running show in the history of the galaxies and the universe, Meet the Press and MTP Daily on MSNBC. Enjoy the weekend. And back after this, first here's Mary. A tradition unlike any other. Hey, those steps look wet. Should I walk down those?
So soothing. Listen to the music.
That's a problem. Dustin Johnson was actually carrying a harp down the steps, playing this song when he fell.
Poor guy.
Steve, I think you made that up.
I don't make stuff up. You know that about me.
I know that.
Dustin Johnson, as far as we know, has received a very specific medical treatment from Dr. Paulina, his wife, Paulina Gretzky Johnson. Mm-hmm. And is it his personal trainer? I believe his personal trainer has been working with him.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Seems like you'd want the PGA Tour doctor that's on every tour site to be there, wouldn't you?
No, it's his trainer, Joey Diafisalvi.
Joey Boots.
Joey Boots.
But we don't know if he's going to play or not. So this is the opportunity for you guys to make your adjustments. If you picked Dustin Johnson yesterday in the Big Show Masters pool,
which everyone did.
You need to make that change. I've changed to Rory. There's a lot of possibilities out there that are good. Listen, even if he's good to go this afternoon, if he's as hurt as they said he is, he's not going to win.
So how much time do we have?
So we really have to. Why don't we just use three instead of four?
No, pick another player.
Ah. Well, because I didn't pick Dustin Johnson, so.
No, you didn't?
Yeah, you did.
No.
You're the only one. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pick another player.
So just tell Mary.
All right, we'll pick
another
player.
Balls are in the air soon, and I mean that in a golf way. Oh. So so you got to pick them before the event starts.
What if he does play?
Well, you can keep your pick. That's fine. I'm just telling you he's not going to win if he's just hurt as badly as they claim he is.
What an awful injury. I mean, really.
It's not good.
The day before you tee off, and it's not like you do it on the course. It's, a home injury. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's not good. I believe maybe the stairs, is some sort of second set of stairs behind the grassy knoll kind of story going on here. But is it possible one of the other tour players who Dustin Johnson supposedly fooled around with the wives tripped him on the steps? Oh. Finally got to him?
I was going to say, did someone push him?
Allegedly.
There's no evidence of that.
Allegedly.
He was wearing socks, and his socks slipped on the bare wood on the step.
Which can happen.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've done that.
This is why you should only rent a ranch house.
Yeah. But don't you have to step up into the ranch house?
Yeah.
Always.
Technically.
These were like garage steps. They're like three steps. It wasn't even like a long staircase.
Oh, was it?
No. He was probably putting beer cans in the recycle bin.
Possible, sure.
Oh, yeah. Allegedly.
Yeah. All right, so make your adjustments or don't, but Dustin Johnson, as of now, is still questionable for the final tee time at the Masters, which is scheduled to roll today. I haven't looked at the weather in Augusta. Dave, have you?
Yes, I have. It is bright and sunny. But it is very windy, gusts up to 40 miles an hour.
Whew, going to be high scores, kids.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
We continue with a little thing called the Steve Cochran Show. Big old waves. Big ol' waves on Lakeshore Drive. Be advised. And I'm not kidding when I say this. Just avoid it if you can. I mean, yeah, it's open. Drive it. But don't come crying to me if you're floating somewhere along Clark Street when you were on Lakeshore Drive 2 minutes ago.
No, and those barricades are up, too. And we were talking earlier, Steve, about there literally were people walking. There was a guy biking along the lake, too, and you could see just the images from Skycam 9, from Channel 9. And literally the wave came up, and he went toppling over into the water.
And was he rescued?
Yes. Yeah.
Not sure we should have. Matthew Dowd joins us now, American political consultant, best-selling author for the New York Times, ABC News, political expert. Frankly, Matthew, you have too many credits.
Mary, you got Steve mixed-minused out. Steve is mixed-minused.
Well, we're mixed-minused out. Oh, boy, we're mixed-minused out. I don't even know what that means.
It's like a like a survey, like a plus or minus 4%.
We'll get those we'll get the technical side fixed so we can get Matthew on here in just a second. But before we do that, what's coming up in your big story at 7:30?
Big story at 7:30 is going to be the waves and the rain. We did Syria at 6:30, and we're going to go a little local here. There's more flights canceled at O'Hare today, Steve, because of yesterday. I think today they're just going to be backing up and dealing with the residual delays from yesterday as well. So we had winds of up to 65 miles an hour yesterday. How about that?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Now, from your vantage point, what was your view like?
My view was windy and rainy and very foggy, too. A lot of fog was blowing in over the lake. It was just a mess. I feel like we've kind of been in Seattle. I love Seattle, but I feel like we've kind of been in Seattle these past few days, don't you?
Yeah, well, it is very odd, and then it's going to turn into this typical Chicago.
Yeah.
Spring is always optional because eventually you just turn on summer. If somebody flips the switch, I believe it's skilling, and then it's 70 or 75, and that's kind of what we're looking at Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and beyond.
Yeah, and we're in some weird territory today because temperatures will be above freezing, but this morning you saw a little bit, maybe a snow flurry. It's kind of like this freezing rain, this frizzle this morning as well, and that'll continue.
All right, let's get traffic in here while we try to get technically set up with Matthew and talk about a book he's written. Before we do that, Mary, what is the traffic situation?
Well, situation on Lakeshore Drive. Aside from the high winds, we still have this pin-in accident southbound past Lawrence. Two left lanes are blocked with crews there, and they're also northbound before Lawrence blocking the two left lanes. So backups in both directions right now on Lakeshore Drive. Avoid that if you can. Westbound I-90 past US 20, two right lanes with an accident. Another one at Ogden and 294 in Hinsdale. Down wires in Palos Park, 131st between LaGrange and Southwest Highway. Inbound Edens is a half hour from Lake Cook. Inbound Kennedy, 55 from O'Hare. 22 from the Edens. Outbound 36 to O'Hare. Inbound Ike is an hour from 53. 45 from Mannheim. 40 outbound to 53. Stevenson inbound 40 from 294. The Ryans 20 from 95th. Slow into Sibley and the Bishop Ford, 57 from about 130th. And the trailer ban is in effect on I-90, the Indiana Toll, between the State Line and State Road 39 because of the high winds. This will be in effect until 2 this afternoon. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app, pre-approved by AccuNet Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Mary Vanderbilt, WGN Traffic Central.
Matthew Dowd, hopefully we've got you hooked up here and plugged in appropriately. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. I'm great, man. How are you?
Good, fine. Nice to talk to you again. And the book, A New Way, Embracing the Paradox as We Lead and Serve. This is a book that I hope people can wrap their head around and read, because you're basically saying, let's be open to some of this change. Let's be open to looking at things a different way. And as leaders, we've got to do that. That's basically the message, isn't it?
Exactly. It's basically says we're in this crazy, disruptive, accelerated change time that affects everything, cultures, economically, politics, and everything. And the best leaders, if you look back in history, understand about embracing that change, and both seek to lead, but they also seek to serve. And this is for people at all levels, from the White House all the way down to the neighborhood gathering of folks. Is how do we lead at this time?
Is there been a time that's historically parallel to this, or does it feel more tumultuous because it's happening to us? Obviously we think of big things that have happened in the past, world wars, things of that nature, but it just feels like everything's being thrown at us at the same time right now.
I think this type of change has happened three times in our history. It happened 70 or 80 years ago when the Great Depression hit in World War II. It happened 70, 80 years ago before that, when we were changing from an agrarian-based economy to an industrial-based economy and in the midst of civil war. And it happened at the start of our republic in the midst of the revolution. We are at that kind of time. So this is the third or fourth time it's happened in American history.
Matthew, deep. It's philosophical. I love the thought of embracing the paradox and being open to the best decision at that particular moment. So explain a little bit how we don't have to choose. We can kind of stay in that gray area that sometimes people say is a murky area.
Well, and I thank you. And I would say it's not gray. I would say it's actually the most solidified area, but it's very hard. And with some of the paradoxes I talk about are like, let's say, fear and love, which is like leaders understanding people's fears, but also leading people to a place of hope and a place of compassion. Uncertainty and truth. We have to seek the truth. The truth, I think, is discoverable, but it's very hard. And in an uncertain world, you have to keep at it and keep working at it and working at it. Delegation and accountability for leaders. How do you delegate, but how do you also hold people accountable and be held accountable? So that's the space. If you look at history, That's the space where the greatest leaders emerge from. It was not picking from two choices. It was figuring out a new way, as I say.
So when we have such a lack of trust in the current political leadership we have, I always maintain start small. There's a hula hoop concept that comes out of Alcoholics Anonymous where throw a hula hoop down on the ground, look around in a circle, and everything you see should be where you start. Fix that part before you start worrying and bitching about everything else. And I've always liked that concept. But when everybody's so cynical, and by the way, including me, and bashing on the people that are supposed to lead us who aren't telling the truth, how do we make it positive in our own lives?
Well, I think that that's one of the points in the book, which is that in order for this change to happen in the way we want, we can't wait for somebody else to do it. We can't say, well, I'm going to elect Donald Trump or I'm going to elect Hillary Clinton and they're going to bring the change that we need. It has to start with us. It has to start in our small circles and build out. And the interesting thing was leaders never lead. Leaders follow, and they follow where the country wants to go. And if we show the leaders the way that for them to go, they will ultimately follow where we want to take them.
That's pretty, you know what? That's as succinct a way as I've ever heard it put, and it's true because it kind of encompasses the hypocrisy of I'm leading when, in fact, I'm waiting for you to tell me where to go.
Exactly. So I think if we can do it, then we can expect what we want from our leaders, but we have to do it in the circles of our own life.
Andrea, last word.
Matthew, if you're not sure which path to choose, what are your thoughts on taking that leap of faith?
Well, I'm a person of faith. I grew up Catholic, and at the beginning of the book talks about a lot of the sort of pilgrimage that I went on. I think you have to sit quietly, and I think within us are voices that tell us where we really need to go, a place of faith and a place of comfort. But there's quiet voices within us, if we pay attention to them, can really lead us to where we need to go. And we know how we should treat others. Every major religion talks about it, which is treat others like you want to be treated. But I think those quiet voices, when we sit in solitude, tell us where to go.
Get two copies of A New Way. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. It's A New Way, Embracing the Paradoxes We Lead and Serve. Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks. Great to be here.
We're back with more of this show after this. And this is another. Mary, we need another traffic update. Are you up to that?
Sure.
All right, why don't you fire that off right now? Tell us the good news.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Bannon was placed on the Security Council initially as a check on the then National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who had been tasked with depoliticizing, deoperationalizing, as the White House put it, the National Security Council. I'm told by a White House senior administration official that during the Obama administration, there were about 20 or more lines of communication that all led up to the National Security Advisor. They are now streamlining those down to just a handful of those. We are also told, though, that maybe the president wasn't particularly happy with the way that Bannon had been grabbing the limelight, and that may have also played into all of this.
You know, I don't feel like Bannon was grabbing the limelight unless you're talking about the behind-the-scenes limelight, because generally he tried to hide from a bunch of public exposure. This is the sort of Muppet-looking dude that only occasionally shaved, and by the way, I respect that, who got himself placed on the National Security Council and had the Joint Chiefs of Staff removed, which was not a great idea. He was replaced yesterday because the National Security Advisor, General McMaster, has been pushing for it and finally convinced Trump to do it. So whether Trump wanted Bannon removed or not, the overriding scenario seems to be, you know Jared Kushner, Andrea, mm-hmm. Jared, the son-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
Jared's in charge of a lot of things. He's in charge of basically fixing the planet now.
Yes.
Which is why he was in Iraq. He's got a lot on his plate. But yes, he also doesn't like Bannon very much. That's the gossip behind closed doors. And he and Bannon have clashed over a number of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he supposedly went to the president and said, guy's got to go. So Bannon threatened to quit if he was removed from the National Security Council. There's a big bucks donor who somehow got involved in this fight and convinced Bannon to stay.
Mm-hmm.
What his new role is going to be is unclear at this point. But as of right now, he is more on the outside looking in. And Jared Kushner, the man who has to do everything, the husband of Ivanka, he seems to be the guy closest to Trump and most in charge.
There was an interesting article, Steve, in the New York Times. They were talking to Karl Rove, former senior advisor to President George W. Bush, and he too was not allowed to join the national security meetings. And he says that this was a good idea, that Bannon shouldn't be in there. He shouldn't have been added in the first place, and it was right to take him off the list.
Yeah, essentially, the National Security Council is like a board of directors for defense. Mm-hmm. So they have these board meetings, and these board meetings, they come up with whatever the plan is for defense. And they go and they advise the president, and the Pentagon's involved, and the four branches are involved. And it's a big deal, and it's not supposed to be political. So that's why Bannon was not supposed to be in there. Meanwhile, he continues to tout his idea of deconstructing the entire government and remaking it in a more insulated populist manner. I don't know that we have that kind of time right now.
No, right? On. Not the right time to be anti-establishment.
We got a lot going on. I don't think we can reinvent the wheel right now.
Exactly.
Maybe reinvent a spoke or two, and let's see how that goes. But that's the Steve Bannon story for those of you who are politically nutty enough to follow it. It's a big deal because it changes the people that are most in Trump's ear. I'm not sure which ear, but there's two of them. And Bannon had one. I don't think he has an ear now. I think he has more of a leg.
I agree. Do you just see Bannon kind of fading away at some point,
yeah,
too? Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But again, as some of these people go away, the idea that Bannon was on the National Security Council to keep an eye on General Flynn, well, if you had to have someone watching General Flynn, why would you put him in that position?
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
It's an idiotic notion.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll come back. You're going to talk to us about what again?
Oh, we're going to talk about the weather.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
high winds.
Yeah, the weather. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the 214-foot waves on Lake Michigan right now. Andrea has a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
As you know, I'll be meeting with the president of China very soon in Florida, and that's another responsibility we have, and that's called the country of North Korea. We have a big problem. We have somebody that is not doing the right thing, and that's going to be my responsibility. But I'll tell you, that responsibility could have been made a lot easier if it was handled years ago.
There was something different about yesterday in the press conference yesterday. Eric Edelstein joins us. Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Steve?
Hey, you know, I'm doing fine. Are you healthy again? Are you done with the flu?
I am. That was no joke, but I am. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, and I still have a pulmonary embolism. You want some of that?
Oh, God, no. Sorry to hear that.
I can send it your way. I mean, just say the word.
No, I'll let you handle that.
All right, so where do you work, Eric?
I work at AL Media.
All right, so here's the thing that I thought was different yesterday. Did you catch the mini press conference with the leader of Jordan yesterday?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
There was a reporter that brought up responsibility. And it's funny how the president locks on to certain words or something, and then he sort of rolls with one of his Donald Trump ad-libs.
Yeah.
And it was like a light bulb went off, and he went, okay, this is my responsibility, and this is my – well, it's been your responsibility since you took the oath.
Right.
Did you catch that?
It struck me as he was supremely annoyed that he had responsibility, that this is going to take away from his time at Mar-a-Lago and on the golf course. You know, that sort of idea of, like, if only people who'd been in charge took care of this stuff earlier – I wouldn't have to deal with this stuff, you know. It's like, why?
Yeah, and it does, and it doesn't matter about anything that happened before. Frankly, this is one of the things President Obama had to give up after a couple of years of bashing Bush. It doesn't matter who is there before you. It doesn't matter what they did or didn't do. What matters is today. So as he goes into this meeting at Mar-a-Lago with the leader of China, who is typically in a room for that? I mean, both sides have entourages, like Jay-Z, right?
Well, they do, and they're typically, when you have what's called a bilateral meeting between heads of state, you've got a typical protocol, the foreign minister of China, the secretary of state of the United States, all of those people would typically line up, and then you'd have deputy secretaries of state, national security advisor, etc. With this guy, I think it's going to be Omarosa and Jared Kushner and, you know, maybe a guy that filled out his foursome last weekend. I mean, who knows who he's going to bring to the meeting? I mean, there's
well, the protocol,
no rhyme or reason, you know?
The protocol piece is a big deal because the protocol, and of course, the main reason we all know there's a protocol chief in Washington is because of the Goldie Hawn movie. But the protocol chief is a person that tries to keep you from stepping in it from a cultural standpoint, right?
Well, there's a couple things that matter. I mean, everyone sort of sees this maybe as a bit of pretense, but there is a rhyme. There's a reason to the rhyme, which is the following. Number one, as you said, you don't want to insult someone from a different culture with certain types of words and whatnot. But more importantly, I think it has to do with channels of communication. Obviously, the president of the United States and the premier of China are not going to always be picking up the phone and talking to each other. And so you want to have lines of communications between foreign ministers and secretaries of state and people at sub-cabinet levels and people at the staff level as well. So some of the protocols introducing those people, allowing them to spend some time together and relate as human beings, because ultimately I know sometimes we lose sight of that fact. We are all human beings. And so a lot of that stuff's in place for a purpose. And I think just to disrupt that because it's annoying to you or you don't have the patience to deal with it, I think is ultimately detrimental to these kind of talks.
So when they get in the room, I don't know the Chinese leader's ability with English. Is he fully English speaking?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Because a translator tends to slow these things down, right?
That's right. That's right. And I could see him getting supremely, impatient with all that process and just wanting to cut to the chase. And, you know, that's a dangerous thing.
So when you prep someone for, and I think even the most ardent Trump supporter would admit that, oh, details are not a big deal for this president. He's not fond of them. He doesn't like to read. He doesn't like to swim in that pool. So how do you prep someone like Donald Trump for a meeting like this so he doesn't say something really damaging?
Well, I don't know if you had a chance to read any of the transcripts of the New York Times interview he did yesterday. Well, clearly they said, we want to announce this infrastructure thing. And so, you know, they got the New York Times reporters into the Oval Office. He starts talking for like 20 minutes, says nothing about infrastructure. All he's talking about is Bill O'Reilly and why he shouldn't have, settled those cases. And then Hope Hicks says, let's talk about infrastructure. And so.
Right. And this is a 25-year-old girl who had never been in politics prior to the campaign.
Yeah. Right. She's like, Mr. President, can we talk about infrastructure? She's like, no, I want to talk about Bill O'Reilly. So, you know, extremely difficult. I think the only thing you could do with a character like Trump is have a note card that says, here's the 3 points that I don't care where your, monkey mind goes in terms of bouncing off of walls. You got to bring up these 3 things or at least be prepared to respond to these. And Mr. President, with all due respect, if we get through this meeting and we don't cover these things, we've kind of failed. I mean, that's the only thing you can do, and then you just hope for the best.
And is that Reince Priebus in all likelihood?
Yeah, I mean, typically it would be Chief of Staff, it would be Secretary of State, but who knows with Tillerson? I don't know, is Tillerson even going to be there at this meeting, or is he busy doing other stuff?
Well, we know he's not holding a press conference.
No.
All right, so the Chinese folks, the Chinese the delegation comes in here. They, get a paper. They have TV. They've been following this because it's the President of the United States. They have some preconceived notions of what they're dealing with and who they're dealing with. So are we overreading this? We collectively overreading this and that Trump could say something really damaging? Because it seems to me that the Chinese leadership comes in and goes, this guy could say something wacky. It wouldn't surprise them.
Yeah, and I don't think they're particularly, I think they would expect that kind of thing, and I don't think they're easily rattled. I think they have a big agenda. And again, let's keep in mind, while we may consider ourselves frenemies with the Chinese and the Chinese frenemies with us, we're sort of codependent in terms of the amount of trade done between the countries, in terms of the investment that's done between both countries. And so we're both in this together, if you will. Now, the big issue is going to be, I think, North Korea. I think the president's made that clear. And, the Chinese have been the primary state sponsors of North Korea, but of late, they've been pretty tough on them. The question becomes, if the president doesn't get the premier to say something he likes about North Korea, which I doubt he will, what does Trump mean when he says we're going to handle this ourselves? I mean, that's a scary prospect, Steve, because the way I read it, there's 3 options. You negotiate with them, you leave them alone, or you attack them, and none of them are good options. So
No. And by the way, the reason they're not good options is they don't hit us first. They would immediately hit South Korea, Japan.
That's right. So there's a lot at stake in this meeting. And so it's easy to poo-poo it and roll your eyes, but, the stakes are high. This is not reality. This is reality TV, but not of the fake kind. This is the real kind.
And the last word on this for now, and we'll come back and ask you a couple other things, is China's stake in this is they don't want a refugee crisis with North Koreans pouring over their border. I think there's 900 miles or so of border with North Korea. It might be more than that, might be less. And they have a limited amount of control over North Korea, but because of their limited communication, China doesn't tell you anything.
No, they
appear to be somebody that's looking the other way, but they have great concern about North Korea. They have to.
Absolutely. I mean, they're the ones that, as you said, would be greatly affected by the refugee crisis. I mean, I think as the predominant trade player in the Pacific now, particularly with us pulling out of the, you know, the TPP, there's a lot at stake for China in terms of stability in that region. So it's not like you could say that, you know, the U.S. Cares more about bringing North Korea under control than China. I just think China has a more realistic view of what's possible and what's not possible in dealing with that country.
More with Eric Adelson in just a second. Let's get traffic. Mary's back with it. Wind gusts between, what would you say, Mary, 40 and 200 miles an hour right now?
Oh, yeah, somewhere in between. Okay. But who's counting?
Yeah, I don't exaggerate.
Exactly.
Eric Adelson's with us. We're talking politics, of course. And, Eric, let me get Andrea in here because we were talking off the air about the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Eric, wanted to ask you, this whole Neil Gorsuch thing, why are the Democrats playing this way? Is it simply because Mitch McConnell wouldn't give Merrick Garland the hearing and Chuck Schumer saying, hey, tit for tat, we're going to do the exact same thing? I just don't know what they are. They think they're gaining by doing this, especially now with the rules change, which will affect perhaps the next Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know that I would advise that strategy, but I think it goes back to what Matthew Dowd was saying about, you know, leaders really follow. And I think this has to do with the progressive left, the resistance, as it's calling, really being up in arms and energized about everything the Trump administration does. And I think if there was a perception that some of those senators who just capitulate to Trump on Gorsuch, I think they would have major problems. And so I think there's a sense of Democrats getting a bit of a spine and standing up on principle to this guy. Now, look, I don't think this is the fight to have. We could certainly argue about Gorsuch and his qualifications, and there's some kind of wacky opinions that have come out in the hearings. But, you know, of all the outrages of the Trump administration, you know, Gorsuch is, I think, relatively low on that list. But I do think it's a function of the strength of the progressive left right now saying do not capitulate.
But in doing this, don't you run the risk of the next one or two openings that come up, you will definitely get someone that's way farther to the right than Gorsuch?
It's possible, although I don't know how capitulation doesn't also, you know, contribute to that. Democrats are in a tough spot. I'm not sure what you do, what the play is. And so maybe you just be the loyal opposition and just oppose everything at this point.
Well, you know me, I'm a Hallmark card with legs. I've been maintaining that, you know, playing up the fact that McConnell wouldn't even have the guts to go through a hearing and a vote on Merrick Garland, and saying we're actually going to be the adults in the room would be something you could play as a campaign strategy down the road. Do you do this every day. Does that work as a campaign strategy, or am I too much of an optimist?
I think you're a bit of an optimist. I mean, it sounds nice, and I think to rational people in a rational discourse, it makes a ton of sense. But in the heat of a political campaign, you know, it takes a lot to kind of explain that. Like, we weren't babies, and we stood up, and we allowed them to have a hearing. I mean, it's kind of processy. So
that's a good hook, though. We're the Democrats. We weren't babies.
Right. What do you think, a bumper sticker in that?
I think there's a T-shirt. Yeah. Last question. This Syria thing is horrific, and I understand why the video keeps popping up, but I can't look at it. I can't.
These are
children and babies being murdered by this madman Assad, with help from the Russians. For the final time, if Donald Trump doesn't speak out about this negatively on Russia, I don't believe he'll ever say anything about Russia until he either finishes his term or is kicked out of office.
Yeah, you know, it's bizarre. It's just bizarre that he wouldn't say anything. Now, maybe I'll be the Hallmark card for a moment, Steve. I did see kind of a shred of optimism in Trump. For the first time I've ever heard him say something, said he changed his mind based on what he's seen. That, you know, he was critical of Obama and the red lines and saying he's going to do something in Syria. Trump had said during 2013, 2014, that we ought to just worry about America and not worry about Syria. And to his credit, I'm going to give him a tiny bit of credit, he did say yesterday in one of the interviews, I changed my mind when I saw what happened there and I saw those pictures. So, you know, maybe the guy, maybe there is some blood pumping in that body of his. But you're right, to not single out Russia, it's just bizarre and it's counterintuitive. And, you know, if, as you said, if he doesn't do it on this, when will he?
Yeah, and for Nikki Haley to stand up at the UN and do it, and I thought did it incredibly effectively and really powerfully, that's the time the president either leads ahead of that or follows it and backs it up. And to just not bring up Putin, I don't get it. There's only one conclusion, kids. There's something going on with Russia. I know you're saying, Steve, really? Thank you, Einstein. We hadn't heard that before. But what else could the answer be?
Where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's a whole lot of smoke in this one, Tom.
Got a big weekend planned, Eric?
I'm thinking about a bike ride on the lakefront this afternoon. You want to come with me?
You know,
was that you being swept in by that wave yesterday?
No, but I saw that, so yeah. I figured I ought to get my bike out and try it. Why not? Right? Is that what you do?
I know people like an adventure, but this is not the time to do it. Just stay off the the drive. It's too dumb. Don't be dumb.
Absolutely. I hope you feel better.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Thanks for being on, as always. We'll come back with Dean after the news next on 720.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
Live to Channel 9. Don't forget the CLTV Hour every morning at 9 and 3 o'clock with Rowan Anna as well. Here, but Dean's on TV all morning long.
Can't get rid of me.
Can't stop him. Can't even hope to contain him.
Nope.
Let's start with the Lonnie Brooks funeral details. Is this open to the public?
It is open to the public, actually. You know, he was a real Chicagoan, though born in Louisiana, from Texas, came to Chicago in the late 50s. He was a real Chicagoan. Lots of friends, lots of family, people who loved him here. The visitation for Lonnie, who died on April 1st, will be Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, the Blake Lamb Funeral Home in Oak Lawn. And they're going to have a funeral Monday morning at 11 at the Liberty Temple, Full Gospel Church. Burial will be at the historic Lincoln Cemetery on the south side of Chicago.
Condolences to all that knew him best. And Andrea, what was the connection? You had a friend that played for him?
I did. My friend Pat Duty, who's just an accomplished, amazing, incredible drummer from the south side of Chicago, from Tinley Park, and we went to high school together, still a very good friend of mine. Lonnie gave him his first gig, one of his first gigs, I believe, as a young drummer, and he played for Lonnie for many years. Grew under him, learned from him. Lonnie mentored him, and he went on to do great things himself, but never forgot Lonnie and said he was always just such a mentor to so many people and took all these young musicians under his wing and just spread his knowledge to them. So just a wonderful person overall, Lonnie Brooks was.
Andrea said Duty.
I did.
Yeah.
That's my friend Pat.
Her friend Duty.
Love you, Pat.
Hey, Beavis, she said Duty.
And that's like a real name, Dean. If you and I said Duty, it'd be a bit.
Why do I feel like I'm in a locker room?
With 12-year-olds.
With 12-year-olds. I love you guys.
You're Duty.
We have some other music
news. No, you are.
News.
You're Duty.
You're Duty. You're Big Duty. We have some other music news. Country Music Hall of Fame, Barry Manilow news, David Schwimmer news. And, Dean, we come back. I got to ask you about this Pepsi commercial with Kendall Jenner.
Weird.
Slightly missed the mark, but are we blowing it out of proportion? We'll get to all of that after Mary gives us the wind report.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Back to Dean at Channel 9 now. So David Schwimmer's getting a divorce?
They are taking a break officially.
He and Rachel?
His actual wife of the last 7 years.
Yeah, Rachel.
Zoe Buckman / Rachel. confirmed that they are separating right now. They're taking some time apart to determine the future of their relationship, as they announced in a statement yesterday. So
they have kids.
They have a 5-year-old daughter together. And been together for 10 years, been married for 7, 5-year-old daughter, and taking a break right now, and asking for privacy at this moment, by the way.
Well, I can't promise that. You know how I am. But good luck to them, and I hope they figure out a way to work it out, because when you have kids, you ought to try.
Schwimmer is in Chicago right now. He's directing a play at the Looking Glass Theater, so this comes at a, you know, kind of a locally significant time, at least for us.
Steve, I wanted to ask, Dean, did the friends still stay in touch? I mean, I know they were such a tight-knit group, and they did an appearance, I think, when NBC had that special, but are they still close?
It doesn't seem that way to me.
Yeah, me neither.
It seems like they all want to put distance. You know, I just talked to David Schwimmer last week, and when you bring up friends at all, there's like a physical recoil, and same with the rest of them, too. They don't especially want to talk about it. I'm not going to say, you know, that they don't like each other and avoid each other.
Right.
But I think it's way more significant to us than it is to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, aren't Courtney Cox and Jennifer Aniston still real good friends?
I think so. It seems like it. The girls are...
Yeah, Courtney Cox said the girls still hang out all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Maybe not the boys.
No. No. Well, you know, Schwimmer with all his marriages. Come on.
Right.
What? I'm not helping.
Has he been married before?
Barry Manilow did an interview with who yesterday?
Did an interview with People Magazine and revealed for the first time intimate details of his personal life, which he's never talked about ever, revealing a 40-year relationship with his manager, Gary Keefe. It says that they've been together professionally and romantically since the late 70s. They legally got married in 2014. And
I think that's pretty remarkable. The fact that you could, in show business, be together with anybody for 40 years. So, you know, I mean, good for him for talking about it or not talking about it. It's his business, but I think that's good for him.
Great, you know, for anyone to have a 40-year relationship with somebody is amazing. Here's the sad part to me, that he kept it quiet all these years because he was afraid that he would disappoint his fans if they knew. There's kind of a sadness to that whole thing.
Yeah,
that somebody feels like they, you know, they can't really be who they are because they might be disappointing somebody else, which shouldn't make any difference to anybody. You know, for whatever reason, he finally felt comfortable to talk about it. And he said that his fans have been nothing but great and supportive, and he's happy that he went public with it all.
He's a nice guy. I've interviewed him many times through the years. And I've known others, and I don't know about you, Dean, but I've known others that have come across him, and he wasn't so nice, but I've never had a problem with him.
Me too. I've interviewed him. The first time I interviewed him, actually, was right around the late 70s. When he was playing here in Chicago so much, couldn't be nicer every single time. And I will never forget the one time that we had him in the very studio where you are sitting right now, the Allstate Showcase studio. It was pouring, raining, crazy, lightning, tornado watches. Barry comes in and does an interview, and probably about 50 fans were standing out in the rain and the lightning and the thunder. Barry maniacs, his super fans, were standing outside. And normally I just would have invited them in to come and watch the interview, but, you know, there were quite a few people, and there was a little bit of a security issue. So we sent as many umbrellas outside as we possibly could so the people could watch Barry be interviewed.
Yeah, and do you know who Tony Kornheiser is?
I don't.
ESPN and... Yeah, radio, podcast, different things, mostly a sports guy. But he used to write culture for the Washington Post. And he tells a very funny story about Barry Manilow. And this is one of the Barry Manilow may be secretly a mob leader sort of thing.
Wow.
He wrote a piece on Barry Manilow, and apparently Barry didn't like it. So when they did the interview for the piece, Barry invited him back for the concert. So he writes the piece. He thinks the piece is fine. And Tony's a gruff guy. But he shows up, and the manager meets Tony and says, "You got to talk to Barry. He's mad." He goes back to see Barry Manilow and goes, "I want you out." He said, what do you mean you want me out? He goes, I want you out. My people are going to drive you to the border. I said, drive me to the border? I live here. What do you mean drive me to the border? So whatever he was talking about, driving him off the property where the concert was, The idea that Barry Manilow could kick you out of your home state was very amusing to me.
I love that. I love that. There's got to be some fantastic stories. Because there was a time when there was nobody bigger than Barry Manilow.
No, very big. And, Chuck Todd on his daily show, MTP Daily, yesterday brought up Barry Manilow. Did you know this? Here's some trivia for you. And, I love the trivia. You know how often I bring it up. I write the songs. You know the song, I Write the Songs?
Yeah.
He didn't write it.
I did know that.
Oh, you did know that?
Who wrote it?
Some other dude. Somebody other than Barry Manilow wrote the songs, I Write the Songs. Huh? This is fascinating. This is the kind of stuff you're paying big money for.
See the irony?
I write the songs. I used to know this. Bruce Johnston, I think, who was...
there you go, from the Beach Boys. That's it.
Brian Wilson?
Yep, that's it. Bruce Johnston.
I used to be thick into my Barry Manilow trivia back in my Fire Radio days, WFYR, Fire Radio, oldies.
Yeah.
And we used to play like Barry Manilow songs every 90 minutes.
I just like the idea that Andrea is so used to you and I making error-filled mistakes that she just assumed it was wrong and went with somebody else.
I did. I just completely Googled it. It is Bruce Johnston.
I don't blame her.
1975.
No, I don't blame her at all.
You know what I do? I believe you guys so much that I want to go online and just solidify it with myself. Because I come in complete confidence
a news person.
In you guys. Right.
If your mom says you love you, you confirm it. You check it out.
Three times.
Yep.
Richard Simmons sighting?
Apparently, everyone's been wondering, what the heck with Richard Simmons, because he's pretty much disappeared for somebody who was pretty public, making appearances everywhere. He really hasn't been seen anywhere for several years. Sparked this podcast, Missing Richard Simmons. Apparently, he signed a new merchandising deal with a company that will represent him and exclusive worldwide rights for a collection of new Richard Simmons-inspired products. Thank goodness we can get
Tiny
Steve
shorts.
Some new short shorts and tank tops. There will be a whole new Richard Simmons collection of merchandise that'll be coming out soon. Richard Simmons
then,
oil for you
this.
To rub all over yourself so you look shiny all the
right.
time.
Yeah, 10. I like a 10:30 this time of year. And finally, the Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial. This thing seems like it's blown out of proportion a little bit, though I do understand, if you've seen the commercial, how the notion on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, that the commercial would be rolled out and the way to solve all protests in the streets is to offer a Pepsi to the cops.
Right.
A little short-sighted.
As Pepsi admits, they issued a statement saying that they intended it for it to be a global message of unity, peace, and understanding. But they say, quote, clearly we missed the mark and we apologize. If you haven't seen the commercial, it's still on the web and you can find it someplace. But there's a protest that's going on. Kendall Jenner just happens to be doing a modeling gig nearby. As it's going on, she sees the protest with the protesters and the police, goes and grabs a can of Pepsi and takes it to the police officer, which brings unity, love, and harmony to everyone. People who are involved in serious social movements, most significantly, I guess, the Black Lives Matter movement, feels that it trivializes, the whole thing, that these very serious issues that are going on in America shouldn't be used as a marketing tool by somebody. And really, when you watch the commercial, it does trivialize the whole thing, is that there's an intense standoff between, the police have their billy clubs out and the protesters are shouting, and here's a Pepsi. Suddenly everything's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
So I guess if you don't care about the protest movement, you probably don't care about this and think it's too much. If you're deep into it, if you know someone who's been affected by violence, and that's why you took to the streets, and that's why you feel strongly about it, then I guess I can definitely understand why people might feel sensitive about it.
Talk about some movies tomorrow when we do this again.
Yes. I know we've, you know, I know you're a big fan. Well, I haven't seen either of them right now. We have this new movie with all the elderly actors, Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine and all those, and I'll see that later.
Going in style.
But also we have the new Smurf movie. So I don't believe I'm going to have an opportunity to see that one. But
you don't want to or you're unable to.
Well, maybe a little of both.
Right?
I'm told Pat Tomasillo did some of the stunt work for the Smurfs because he's approximately the same height. Is that true?
It's entirely possible. I don't know if I've ever seen him with full blue body makeup on before.
Dean, you've had a full blue body.
I have.
When you were Blue Man.
I have. That was a long time ago. They did full makeup and made me a Blue Man, and I'm still cleaning that out of my shower.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
It's the messiest thing that's ever happened in my shower.
Actually, Dean and I are looking for a third, maybe Paul Conrad, but it's sort of a senior tour Blue Man group where we just sit in comfortable chairs and fire paintballs at the audience.
Yeah, that, and it's the blue from our varicose veins.
Oh, it's funny because it's sad. All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow. That's Dean, back with the big story next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
843, wondering what the status is of the House Intelligence Committee's investigation. Well, apparently we have some breaking news. Steve Grzanich on the seventh floor. What is Chairman Nunes up to now?
It is big news. Devin Nunes has just announced that he is going to step aside from the committee. He's stepping down as the chairman, at least temporarily, for the Russia probe because of all of the criticism he's been getting. He did issue a statement just a little while ago saying this is because of left-wing claims that are false against him. But nonetheless, he says in terms of trying to move forward with this investigation, in the best interest of that investigation, he is stepping aside for now as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee.
Well, good for him.
All right.
Good for him for doing it. Yeah. Meanwhile, Dave, down at the Masters, I'm just looking at a leaderboard here. And as you said, the big names are out later. But if I'm reading this correctly, Dave Chappelle is leading at 2-under par.
I don't believe that.
I didn't even know
Dave Chappelle. Kevin Chappell is at 2-under. He's got back-to-back birdies on the second.
Eagles
and
co-founder and drummer Don Henley, second at 1-under.
That actually would not be Don Henley. It would be Russell Henley.
Oh, Russell Henley. All right, fine. And the big boys will be out later. It'd be fun to see Phil Mickelson be competing all weekend.
Yeah, he tees off. About 9:45, about an hour from now, he will be teeing off. It would be, you know what? I think he's got a real good shot to be around, to be on the leaderboard, to be there. Don't you?
I mean, really do. And you guys were making fun of me this week. Because never. I'm having trouble, you know, having trouble breathing, which, by the way, is not an underrated thing. Mm-hmm. But you were talking about getting me a hover round or one of those rascal scooters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Phil's 46 now, and the Masters is very hilly. So I think maybe you don't give him a golf cart, but maybe Phil could have a scooter, and he could use that to get around the course, huh? What about
that? I think that's possible. And by the way, that wasn't our suggestion for you, Steve. That was your suggestion for you.
No, I don't think so. I think you guys are just being mean. Just being mean.
See, I still think a Segway. I can see Steve tooling around a little Segway.
You know what we have at the White Eagle Golf Club, which is cool? We have these, they're sort of like golf Segways. And I know at the beautiful Glen Club, a fine Kemper facility where we play with Emil, the great Emil Esposito, they have them as well, but they're called golf boards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are like wild.
Have you tried it?
I've seen them. I haven't tried them, but I've seen them in person. They're like hoverboards, kind of.
Yeah, I've never actually gotten on one, but I have seen them. They're pretty cool.
They're neat, yeah. I'd be afraid I'd fall off with my clubs. But
they're like these triple width... they're thicker. They're wider than skis, but, you know, let's say they're 18 to 24 inches wide, a couple of feet, right? Mm-hmm. And you stand on them, and your clubs strap on the back, and they work sort of like a Segway.
Yeah.
And, you know, to tool around the golf course. So
I tried them at the Glen Club, and I watched people all fall off of them, just so you know.
I would totally fall off.
Yeah, I went too fast, and so then my clubs, like, we toppled
over.
Toppled over, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've used it a couple of times, and outside of the fact that I look ridiculous at my age doing it, I had a good time with it.
So, Emil Esposito, by the way, softest hands I've ever felt.
What?
Is that right?
Oh, my.
Yeah. Hmm. Is that on a golf course?
Wow.
Well, I'm just clearing this up.
Where to go with that?
Because I feel the same way.
I was going to say, shouldn't he be feeling her hands, but then that would open up a whole new can of worms.
I've known Emil for a long time, I agree. What? His hands.
Isn't playing with Emil hilarious, Steve? Hey, sorry about that doll.
Yeah, he is the best, the great Emil Esposito. All right, you must pick one. When we come back, we'll go with one of these stories. All right, you must pick one. David Letterman will be at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony tomorrow night. You may wonder why. That's one of the stories. Is it possible for a kid to be accepted at every single Ivy League school? Yep, it's happened again. And what is dog sharing? What's dog sharing? Okay. You must pick one. Which of those stories would you like to hear more about?
I'd say dog sharing.
Dog sharing, Dave?
I'll go with dog sharing. I think I might have heard a little about this.
You know a little bit about dog sharing?
I do.
All right. So we'll come back. We'll do dog sharing. The 17-year-old girl, story is a 17-year-old girl got accepted by all 8 Ivy League schools.
Oh, yeah.
Why can't you just pick one?
Yeah,
I mean, how much does it cost to apply to each of those?
$10,000 apiece.
Just
$10,000 apiece.
Yeah. $10,000.
It's got to be a couple $100 to apply to each, right?
I would think.
Yeah, but that's a pretty cool story. Come on, if you can do it, I think it's cool.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah, right.
But why did she do it? Just to prove she could do it.
Yeah. Well, listen, why are you guys knocking a kid that got into every Ivy League school?
It's great.
I'm surprised Abigail Grace was even applying to colleges.
Oh, nice.
Well.
Booyah.
Ifeoma Whitethorpe is her name. Ifeoma Whitethorpe from Morris Hills High School in Rockaway, New Jersey. I think it's great. Andrea thinks it's pretty good, but Dave and Mary think it's ridiculous.
It's happened before, though.
Somebody's got to show off.
Absolutely. Letterman will be inducting Pearl Jam tomorrow night. The original offer went out to Neil Young. Neil Young has a health problem and isn't able to make it to the event, but David Letterman, in his bizarre mountain man beard, will be inducting Pearl Jam tomorrow night at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And for a guy that rarely goes out and does anything, that's kind of big news. Before we go any further, I want to throw out a congratulations to, Andrea, you know, my friend Dr. Sam, the veterinarian.
Yes, love Dr. Sam.
Crazy Dr. Sam on the show. One of the best vets, period. Mm-hmm. He is now a grandfather.
Oh, very nice.
So congratulations to his daughter, Anna, and her husband, Jared, a great guy.
Little boy or girl, Steve?
Little boy, Carson Jared Olson.
Nice.
Born sometime overnight or early this morning.
Very cool. Congrats, Dr. Sam. We love
him. Yeah, very exciting. Very exciting, and he's a good guy, and it's just great that he can't continue to hassle me about being old enough to be a grandfather. He's actually older than me, and now he's joined the club.
Yeah, you might have to keep an eye on little Carson just when he gets older, and Abigail Grace, they do a play date. You gotta watch those young guys.
Wait a minute, I hadn't thought about that.
He already sounds like he has a doctor name, Dr. Carson.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And CJO, that's perfect for monograms, and you know how big I am on that.
Right.
At Mary and Joy Rehabilitation Hospital, you're going to get high-tech rehabilitative care from compassionate clinicians. Mary and Joy has nationally accredited programs in stroke, brain injury, and pain management, and a 40-year legacy of serving the Chicagoland area. As part of the Northwestern Medicine Program, Mary and Joy is continuing its commitment to invest in leading-edge technology, research, and expanded therapy options to benefit patients. You want to learn more about it? Call Mary and Joy or approach them any way you like. I like the website, maryandjoy.nm.org, maryandjoy.nm.org. And at 8:54, you guys selected which story again?
Dog sharing.
Yeah, dog sharing.
Okay, so dog sharing, you guys know how much money is involved in the pet business, right?
I mean,
people are spending gazillions. Gazillions. You know, whether it's walking your dog, taking care of your dog.
Pet insurance.
Insurance, that's exactly right. But if you think of Uber as a model, part of the dog sharing business, and that's just an umbrella term, is something like Fetch. And what Fetch does is everybody owns a piece of the company. So let's say we all wanted to walk and take care of dogs, you know, after the show's over, because we have that kind of time. Dave would take a shift, I would take a shift, you would take a shift, Andrea, and we'd all share in the money and pool it and then hand it out to each other later.
Mm-hmm.
There's Dog Hero, there's Borrow My Doggy, there's House My Dog, Cage Free and Stress Free. There's Babble Bark and Happy Tail. Happy Tail is an app for dogs and dog lovers. Billions and billions of dollars. But this one's the most interesting to me. One of these companies called Rover has a subsidiary idea. It's just a test pilot idea now. But tell me if you'd be interested in this. Essentially, it's time sharing a dog. So you get a dog that you love, but maybe you're concerned about the dog during the day. Well, during the day, you wouldn't just take it to a place where a bunch of dogs are. Somebody else would timeshare the dog who's available during the day, and that dog would hang out with that person for, say, 4 hours. And the second 4 hours might be somebody else who comes and picks up the dog. It's very labor-intensive, but literal dog sharing. So you'd have the dog when you were home. When you're at work, somebody else would have the dog, but not in a take-care-of-the-dog-at-a-kennel sort of way, in a very at-home sort of way. My only concern would be, Dave, and you're a dog lover, too. My only concern would be at some point, what if the dog doesn't want to leave, wants to just hang with the other people?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
This is going to cause dog anxiety.
I think this is an awesome option for people like me because I want a dog, but I
and
work all day.
City?
And what if you go out of town like Andrea does a lot?
Yeah, in the city. This is perfect.
That's cool.
I could timeshare Grzanich's dog, but I don't think he'd share him with me.
You know, it depends. You could trade for food.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. There you go. And this
you give Grzanich a meatloaf, he'll give that dog up.
You know what? You're right. Nice big burger with bacon.
Oh, yeah. Make him a cake. He'll be right there.
But am I crazy? I sort of like this idea.
I think this is an awesome idea.
Well, kennels are going to be upset, though.
I can't imagine how you make it cost effective, but for people that are willing to spend anything possible on their dogs, time sharing your dog where your dog is pampered all day, just like it would be if you were home. Well, there you go.
I think that's super cool, too.
Yeah, like an older person, too.
Most people don't want to not board their dog. Yeah, it's boarding your dog, right? You don't want to board it. You either want to keep it with a friend nowadays or have the dog walker come a couple of times a day. So I think this is perfect, Steve.
All right, so there you go. Run with it, because it's just an experiment for the company called Rover. You could steal it and run with it here in Chicago and make yourself a millionaire by the weekend. Just remember you heard it here from us. We'll take a break, come back, get to the 9 o'clock news. We've got a lot more to do after 9, and CLTV joins us, too, on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Almost hurt myself.
You okay?
Jay Ferguson, Little Thunder Island. Andre, joining us in studio, Josh Hale, CEO of Big Shoulders, and Mike Melendrez from St. Francis de Sales. How many times, Andre, do you go, you run across people and you go, oh, God, you know, I know there's a problem with, you know, kids in the schools, and the schools are in tough situations, but what can I do?
Absolutely. We talk about this weekly. We do on the show.
So what you can do is you can see a problem and fix a problem. Mikey, how are you? Let's start with you.
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
You find it odd that I just met you and I called you Mikey?
Slightly.
Thought you knew each other.
But it's your house.
Would you prefer Michael? Would that be better?
No, Mike would be great.
All right, so we'll go to Mike. That's fine. Mike, St. Francis de Sales, this was your school. Take me back. When were you there?
I graduated from St. Francis de Sales in 1990.
And what shape was the school in then?
You know, it was in pretty good shape. It was, you know, when I was there, it was about 800 kids serving, you know, working class people. It was the kids of firemen, policemen, carpenters, you know, blue collar type families.
Sure. And what shape is the school in today?
Today, it's in really good shape, but it's because of work that we've done over the last few years. What's really changed is the neighborhood. We've, you know, we went from having steel mills all around us, a bunch of access to a lot of jobs, and that access just isn't there anymore. And so while we still serve a working class neighborhood, their access to the jobs is a lot less, so their need for assistance is a lot greater.
But this got to be a 911 situation because the school got down to what, 20, 30, 40, 50 kids?
We got down below 100. Right? We're at 125 now. And so we've got a great plan in place right now with a new leader in the school with a lot of new initiatives going on.
And you guys,
and did you know? Go ahead, Andre.
No, you're right, though, Steve. Like bouncing off of that, too, smaller classes and more specialized, too. You get programs like the arts and things like that for the kids.
Yeah, the arts is back. We just added Latin as a language into the school, added two new AP classes for this past year. So it's been watching what's going on in the building is amazing.
You're making the kids take Latin because you're mad at them? What's the story there?
Right.
I mean, I thought this was a good story, Mike.
If I had to take Latin and Greek roots, they do too.
I understand. All right, so when did this get to a situation where, you know, this is something we're going to need help, and then you bring in Josh Hale, who's here with us, CEO of Big Shoulders?
You know, it was a number of years back. We were looking at what we needed to do with the school to help with enrollment. And when we assessed it, what we saw is that the neighborhood still loved the school, but the families just couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford to have their kids come in. Every family that I met, they sat across the table from us and they said, "Hey, we'd love this. Tell me what I need to do, but I can't afford this full tuition." And so we needed to find a plan to make this financially more accessible to these families. And that's when we started to develop our relationship with Big Shoulders, which has grown tremendously over the years.
So Big Shoulders Fund, Josh, does what?
Big Shoulders Fund was founded about 30 years ago at the encouragement of Cardinal Bernardine in a group of business and civic leaders who said these inner city schools like St. Francis de Sales, our first and foremost community-based organizations that help build social cohesion and hold neighborhoods together, but also they provide a tremendous education at a low cost, and they're really a value add for the city. And so they started raising funds to, at the onset, provide scholarships, and today we provide all sorts of supports from academic programming, enrollment management, as Mike talked about, helping students access it, as well as helping to run the business of the school. And so we support about 77 inner-city Catholic schools with about 20,000 children in them, 80% minority, about 70% living in poverty. But these schools do a tremendous job of helping these children realize a path to a brighter future, you know, the American dream that we talk about. And so working with St. Francis Sales was a natural, and really the heroes of the story down there, and this school getting stronger and stronger, Mike Melendrez, St. Francis Sales, but also the great team down there in the community.
And Steve, as you know, 100% of all the funds, that's the best part of Big Shoulders, goes right toward the program and right toward the school. You don't keep a penny.
We don't. And that was the, I can brag about because I had nothing to do with it, was the brilliance of the founders of Big Shoulders said, how do we ensure that this institution lives to always be there for a school like St. Francis de Sales? And so we have an endowment that ensures that all of our operating expenses are covered. So if you give a dollar to Mike right now, we don't take anything. It goes directly to school.
I'm going to give you a 10. How's that?
Perfect. I'll 50. Take it.
We like the multiplier effect. Yeah. If you stay with Mike long enough, that might go higher. So be careful. Be very careful.
I tell you what, if I give him 100, I can call him Mikey.
There you go, yeah.
Now we're talking.
For 20, I think we can get there, but we'll go with 100.
So Josh, you mentioned the endowment, but is the endowment fully funded, or are you still
the endowment is thankfully we've got tremendous leadership. At the top of it is a guy by the name of Jim O'Connor, John Canning, and Monsignor Vila, who really are the leadership along with a strong board. But we have an endowment about $45 million, which helps enormously. But we also raise, on the margin about $18 to $20 million a year to support these schools. And it's a lot of money. It's a lot of resources. But when you think about having a graduation rate that's over almost 100%, 95%, and then you say, well, how many of those kids, Josh, actually show up in college? And really close to 90% of those children actually show up in college a year following high school graduation, and they persist year after year. And so our graduation rate, we this is all third-party research, is twice the national rate. And then for African-American and Hispanic, it's three times the national rate. And so when you think about what St. Francis de Sales means, it's a lot of work to keep an inner-city Catholic school open. And, if you look at Mike's hours, family, work in St. Francis, I don't think his wife and his job would like to see how much time he puts in down there to keep it going. But that's what it takes. And
It's all about the equity, because that goes to the scholarship piece of this, too. Because if you give a kid a scholarship to get in, that kid's got to do the job. They've earned their way in, but now they've got to earn their way to stay in by doing the work and getting it done, right?
That's exactly. And we have scholarship. We have about 5,000 or 6,000 children in scholarship in any given year. And part of it is the scholarship. But we also find mentors for these children. In fact, my wife and I are presenting at a group tomorrow night at our parish to talk about, that all of us are frustrated right now by the challenges of children getting a great education, the challenges of the violence in our city. And, one step we can all do is to become a mentor, to actually spend time with a child. And that
Amen.
That requires no money, no resources. Now, we certainly would love the scholarship financing, but, on the way in here, Mike was talking to a young man that he mentored who's now in college. That's the dream. And it was because Mike shared, or Mikey, shared time and energy with him.
That's going to stick.
Share time and energy with him. And I watch those relationships, and everybody's nervous getting into them. How can I help this child? You know, it's just a relationship like anything else. It's time and energy, and what a difference that makes. And I think for Chicago, we can all pitch in and make a difference in that way.
You know, $45 million sounds like a lot of money, but it goes very quickly when you're talking about educating kids. Can you guys, either one of you, break down what it costs to educate a student?
It does. Well, you know, I can talk, you know, across our schools, in the elementary and the high school. The elementary schools, we are educating children on the margin for about $5,000. Just a little bit over $5,000. At the high school level, on average, per student, and then at the high school level, it's a little bit closer to $7,000. That's a pretty low cost relative to, you know, costs in other structures. And they're all different, but, you know, to help a child get through the schools in the margin, these families are willing to sacrifice. I always think of it as a partnership that, you know, you have a donor that's willing to give $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 towards a scholarship. And you have a parent or a guardian willing to put in $1,000 or $2,000, they're giving up something. They're not having cable. They're not getting the new car. They're not doing something.
Sure.
And so everybody chips in. And in that way, and with the school and the principal and the leadership, we got a child going to a great school.
Mike Melendrez, I'm sure you're a modest guy, if I'm you, I hope you take a minute to pat yourself on the back to really save and be a part of the story that saved your school.
I try to be modest. It's a lot of fun to watch what's going on at the school, but I think the credit goes to the people in the school and to the families. The families sacrifice a ton to get their kids to be able to go to this school. As Josh said, you know, a large percentage of the families that Big Shoulder supports live below the poverty line. So to put in a few thousand dollars into education is really hard, but it pays off. So last year we had 33 children graduate from our school, and they generated $3.1 million in college scholarships. And so, they put a lot in, but they get a lot out of it. And so it's a lot of hard work for them, a lot of sacrifice, and the kudos should go to them.
And every kid you give an opportunity to maximize their life and turn out to be a functional, happy, family-driven, tax-paying adult, we all benefit from all of it.
Amen.
What do you guys say to, because Mike, you've experienced this story, but Josh, you do this every day. What do you say to people who are listening, you know, who go, well, you know, I'd like to help a school here or there, and they don't know about Big Shoulders Fund or maybe some of the other folks that do what you do? How do you inspire them?
You know, I as you were saying, you know, thanking Mike, I think that's the answer. I think that Mike is a hero for doing this, and he's very humble, and he doesn't. But I've watched his energy and enthusiasm. It's hard to spend a minute with Mike and not get excited about, you know, this mission and the difference it's making. And I think that we'd love to have, you know, anybody come and visit the schools with us, to meet some of the students, to see these local heroes, these community heroes that every day are on the front lines of this mission. And I think you go to that, and that joy that they exude from this mission, we all drink it in and it fills us up. And so it's very simple. You know, www.bigshouldersfund.org. Visit there. Our contact information. We'd love to have you visit the school and to get a glimpse into the difference and how easy it is to jump on board and to go from fretting about the challenges of the city to, you know, taking it on and saying we're making a difference together.
So many of these kids have said this is their safe place.
That's exactly.
They're seeing their friends being shot or killed or,
exactly
or
right.
worse. So this is a safe haven for them. So
that's
it's
a reality. You go to these schools and it's, you know, so easy to forget because you go in and you see love and nurturing, but you say to them, how many of you have someone in your family who have been shot or have been affected by violence? And, you know, hands, you just, it's hard to imagine at that age.
I was on a tour of the school about a month ago, and I was with a student. And while we're on the tour, he and I broke off, and he said to me, he's like, hey, I'm glad we have a chance to talk. I'm like, what's going on? And he says, one of my friends was killed this weekend. And it was like it was second nature, and he had said it happened the year before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and I said to him, I'm like, but you're just here with me. And he's like, the reason I'm able to do this is because the school wraps itself around me at each level. It could be a teacher, it could be a guidance counselor, and that's what he's able to deal with then. And I just got a note about him yesterday. He's been accepted to 6 different colleges.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Nah, it's unbelievable.
So cool.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Andrea, last word.
Give Back Day. That's coming up at Leo, right?
That's exactly right.
April 8th. Okay.
We have a big Shoulders Fund Service Day this coming Saturday, Leo High School. If you want to go to our website, you can sign up right online, or you can call me directly at 312-751-5395. We will get you plugged in.
It's a great organization.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
And Mike, great to meet you. Great to meet you, Josh. And Mike, you know, when Sandberg came to me and said, you know, she knew you and knew about this story, two things occurred to me. One, it's a great story, and one, is there anything you'd like to share about Sandberg that we should know?
I think I'm supposed to not say anything very disclosing there.
So you're afraid of her as well?
Yes. Yeah. Very intimidating.
Yes.
Mike is very smart. Right. You can tell. Yeah, nice. He's so wicked smart.
So, all right, back after this. Thank you, gentlemen. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Both of you.
Have a great day.
After this on 720 WGN. A couple of celebrity clips from the wide, wacky world of politics. Last night, Arnold Schwarzenegger sat down for a discussion, a CNN town hallish sort of thing. You know, he and Trump used to be pals. They don't get along so well anymore. Here's the governor.
President Trump promised us that he wants to make America great again. That's not how you make America great. By taking $1.2 billion away from the children and robbing them blind. Why would you do that? Why would you want to balance the budget on the backs of those kids? Kids are the most vulnerable citizens. Kids are our future. We need them. That's why I said every time that we spend money on those kids wisely, we get it back 10 times over.
That's last night. Robert De Niro, also not a huge Trump fan. I don't know. Where was this from, Jake? Who was De Niro talking to?
It was a local Fox affiliate, I believe, in Los Angeles.
Okay, here's Robert De Niro on President Trump.
In a time we live in this administration, the Trump administration, where funding is getting cut to the arts and possible problems with climate control and things like that, what do you think about what's going on?
You answered. I mean, I can't articulate it well enough other than to say it's ridiculous. It's idiotic. This guy has sullied the presidency. He's debased the presidency. It's just beyond surreal what this guy has done.
You called him a mutt.
He's a mutt.
You still believe he's a mutt?
Every word I said then, I mean today, he has not changed.
I don't think it's very nice to mutts. I'm a fan of mutts. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And your Andrea's favorite, Samantha Bee.
I love Samantha Bee.
Samantha Bee went nuts last night on her new show. She has new episodes every Wednesday night on, is it TNT? TBS? TBS.
It's TBS, yep.
Yeah, Samantha Bee on Ivanka Trump's new role in the White House. Listen.
So at most, Ivanka has stopped one out of 24 appalling executive orders. That's only one more than Tiffany has stopped. But that sorry track record hasn't stopped people from thinking of Ivanka as Lady Galadriel at the very White Council. Stop it, Democrats. She's not a wailing wall for you to desperately stuff your prayer notes into. Look, I get it. People are comforted by the thought of a progressive feminist in the White House, to which I say, if you wanted that, you should have voted for it.
Isn't she? I'm serious. She's hilarious. She's so funny.
After all those years of The Daily Show, who knew she was that angry?
She's very angry.
We need a break before the big story.
I believe
yes.
we do.
All right, we're going to do that right now. And then what are you going to have on a big story for us?
We are going to talk about the weather because there's still more flight cancellations and delays here. The sun's coming out a little bit, but still windy out there, and those waves still crashing up on Lakeshore Drive, Steve.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
All right, back live as we continue. Bill and Wendy will be here at 10. Andre, would you like to introduce our guest?
Oh, I would be thrilled to introduce our guest, the Consul General of Israel to the Midwest. Aviv Ezra is here. Thank you for being here.
Shalom. Thank you for having me.
Shalom. It's a beautiful
nice to
day.
Have you here, sir. And what is this comment about the bulls that I missed?
Well, I'd seen a video and of Mr.
Ezra. Aviv is a big sports guy, yeah.
Yeah, he is a big fan of the Chicago Bulls.
Listen, you can't be in this city without being a really Bulls fan and also a Cubs fan, by the way. For an Israeli, an ignorant Israeli to be a Cubs fan, that's something very interesting.
First off, Aviv, I've never met an ignorant Israeli. And secondly, we got to make you a Blackhawk fan. We got to get you into hockey.
Listen, as somebody has worked for almost 5 years on the Hill in D.C., one of our major rules was always to be bipartisan. So in this sense, I'm a Cubs fan. I'm also a White Sox fan. I'm also a Blackhawks fan. You tell me what it is, we're right there.
There you go.
Very good.
As the Consul General of Israel to the Midwest, your office gets a lot of calls, a lot of concerns. Where are we now with this Trump presidency in regards to trust that the promises made to Israel will be kept?
You're taking me immediately from the Cubs to Mr. Trump, to President Trump. But I'll sure, take that, and sure, we'll come back to the Cubs later on. I mean, I got to tell you, the Prime Minister has visited here just recently in Washington. They had a very, very good meeting, the President and the two principals and the Prime Minister, of course. There are two major topics that have been slightly challenging in the last 8 years. One is the topic of how to approach Iran. We feel that in this sense, we have a 100% synchronization with the president, with the current administration. The president understands very well the danger that Iran poses, not only to Israel, but to the world itself, and specifically also to the United States, and is not willing to allow Iran to proliferate arms, to proliferate terrorism, and to continue with its human rights abuses in Iran and altogether in the world. And the second topic was the issue of the Palestinian track, Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Our goal was always to try and reignite it as fast as we can in a direct negotiations kind of a way. And we feel that the president is marching and is pushing towards the same direction.
There, this is an effort that has been tried and had some success and tried and failed on many, many, many times. What is your level of optimism now?
Well, it's a good question. I think that for many years, Israel is going to be celebrating next year 70 years, which means seven decades. There's so many people that had a lot of diplomatic experience that tried to tackle this challenge. And unfortunately, and obviously, it didn't really work. So in a sense, you have a new approach here. The president is coming from an approach of a businessman. He's surrounded with a lot of people that are great supporters of the U.S.-Israel relationship. The Vice President Pence, who's the governor from this region. Ambassador Nikki Haley, a former governor of South Carolina, superb friend of the U.S.-Israel relationship. And the president himself, his approach and his family's approach, including Mr. Kushner's and Mr. Greenblatt, his special advisor, all come with the approach that I think kind of a business-oriented approach, bringing the two sides together. And we're in favor of it. Our goal is to make sure that we can just begin a process with our counterparts, the Palestinians, to sit down on the negotiation table without preconditions on both sides and start a direction that would lead us to that win-win environment that we're all yearning for almost 70 years now.
Aviv, and by the way, Andre, we want more good news.
Absolutely.
We want any good news in relations to President Trump, and this sounds like good news. Now, you've been there, Andre. You have traveled there.
I have. Israel is wonderful, and I want to talk to you about the tourism, and we were actually comparing. He was telling me we've of course been to many of the same restaurants, Steve, so the food is fantastic, and we'll talk tourism. I'm just curious, does Israel want President Trump to step in and intervene and continue and try and broker some sort of Middle East peace deal, or is Israel's voice now saying, you know what, step back, let us handle this? Don't really take a hands-on approach right now.
So the precedents that we have in history, so we have two peace accords, one with Egypt and the other with Jordan. Mm-hmm. The amazing thing about these two precedents, what we can learn from them, is that you have to have leadership, alignment of leadership of the Israeli side, the other side, and you need to always have an umbrella support coming from the United States, or President of the United States. So with Egypt, we had Prime Minister Begin from the Likud, President Sadat from Egypt that was courageous enough to do the move, was willing and capable of delivering, and we had a president at the time with President Carter that was able to come and give the umbrella support. The same went happened with Jordan. We had Prime Minister of Israel, Rabin, willing and capable, king of Jordan, willing and capable, and you had a hospices, you had a support coming from President of the United States, President Bill Clinton. So I personally, and we believe that involvement of the administration, specifically the president, to push forward the two sides to come together and sit on the negotiation table is highly, highly recommended and needed.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what about these restaurants?
Yeah, we should talk tourism. You know, there was a great article, I think it was in the New York Times last weekend, about how so many celebrities now, it's becoming, you know, especially Jerusalem, Tel Aviv too.
Right.
Great, great city. Love hit some of the clubs in Tel Aviv as well.
So I think one of the tragedies that we're facing in Israel is the fact that Israel is always defined vis-a-vis the conflict. You know, talking about Israel, you say, oh, Palestinian. Talking about Israel, talking about Iran. And that's not the case. It's just, you know, you've been there. You've seen it. And I welcome all the listeners to come. It's a totally different program. It's about high-tech, telecommunications, biotech, scenery, tourism, Sea of Galilee, walk where Jesus has walked, Tel Aviv, which is striving to be as Chicago, as beautiful as Chicago, great beaches, great wine, as we discussed.
Oh, yeah, we talked about the wine too, Steve. And it jumped in on that one. But the wine, it's fantastic.
And one more thing, you know, Israel is also kind of a melting pot. It's an immigration society. My family, for example, one half comes from Germany, the other half comes from Iraq. So the entire concept of a melting pot, it goes to the food, to the people themselves, to the culture. It's really a mixture, an immigrant kind of a society.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. I will get back to your beloved Cubs.
Yes, yes, please.
But before we do that, let's do this. Come back, and Bill and Wendy coming up at 10 on 720 WGN. Back on the Steve Cochran Show, and before we run out of time, and before we get back to the Cubs, the Consul General of Israel to the Midwest, Aviv Ezra. You know, you made a really good point, sir, that I do think we get lost in at times, and that is what a great, great land Israel is and what a great place it is to visit, because we do get too caught up in what's the fight of the day, who's mad at who now, and is everybody going to be safe, and are there bombs, and are the Palestinians and the Jews ever going to get along? There's much more to life than that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. A friend of mine who immigrated to Israel, came down to Israel, and when he landed, he had to open, that's what he said, he had to open a blog, and he called the blog whatwarzone.com. What is happening? You know, it's a problem of perception. When I met Mayor Emanuel just recently, I told him, I think we have a mutual problem, Israel and Chicago, in the sense of branding. Why? Because when you talk about Israel, you think about, camels and Palestinians, right?
Yeah.
Well, wrong. And when you talk about Chicago and you ask the average person in Israel about Chicago, you know, what do you know about Chicago? They'll tell you, Michael Jordan and Al Capone. I said, yeah, hell no, right. You know, that's not Chicago. And my goal here is not just to brand Israel and the Midwest altogether, but rather to brand Chicago also back in Israel.
What does your blood pressure rise to when I start bringing up the Cubs in the World Series?
I love it. I love it.
We just saw some great pictures too, Steve, of Aviv and Kyle Schwarber,
Kyle Hendricks. Yeah. And he went to the to Wrigley Field the night the Cubs won to find out what was going on.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, tell that story. That's a good story.
First of all, let me just, for the record and for your listeners, I want you to understand that you're currently talking to the only Israeli consul general in the history of the State of Israel that has witnessed the Cubs win the World Series.
I take
credit for that. Yeah. So you guys have been waiting for that for 108 years, right?
Yeah,
he's not lying.
But when I met Mr. Reinsdorf also, Jerry Reinsdorf, and he told me, I don't like your Facebook account. I said, why? He said, because I saw your trip to Wrigley and everything, because I did visit over there.
Oh.
And I said, listen, Mr. Reinsdorf, we're bipartisan. So he invited me also July 19th to throw the first pitch.
Oh, that's great.
That's great. Yeah.
I need to practice, however, because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to really make it all the way. But I don't want to make any. I want to make it happen.
Yeah, and you know he owns the Bulls, too.
Of course I know. He was also very gracious also to host us at a Bulls game. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, it was just superb. They had on that huge video billboard, they had, welcome to the Israeli consulate.
Well, that's very nice.
It was really superb.
Where were you an athlete as a boy?
Excuse me?
Were you an athlete as a boy?
No, I was the one who looked at athletes. I had two dreams. One, to be an athlete, and the second, to be a talk show host, so a radio talk show host.
Well, there's not much.
So I'm moving forward on one of them right now, I hope.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I think the talk show host, you can do that tomorrow.
Thank you.
He's giving Todd and Stephanie the hard sell here.
Now I'm going to give you some friendly advice here, because I consider you a friend now.
Thank you.
And the friendly, I've thrown out the first pitch a couple of times at Wrigley, and I've done it at White Sox Park as well, now known as Guaranteed Rate Field. What anybody will tell you is throw it hard.
Yes.
Because you don't want to bounce it.
Yes.
If you bounce it, you're going to get booed. But if you throw it hard and it's a little bit wild, at least you'll entertain the crowd. So as you warm up and practice, just worry about getting it in the air, the 60 feet 6 inches, and you'll be surprised. It's not as hard as it looks. But just get a good wind-up in there, Dave. And, Dave, you know this, Dave. It's all in the legs.
That's right.
Stretch those legs. Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to coach the ignorant Israeli consul general in order to be able to make sure that we're not going to make any embarrassments here?
Yes, Dave and I will take you on a complimentary basis in regards to international relations and our friendship between
nations. We'd be glad to do that.
And we just got the official invitation, Aviv, if you would like to be a member of our WGN Radio softball team. You want to be a pitcher on our
team? Is that a promise or a threat?
No, we need you.
I'm taking it with two hands.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
It is a pleasure to meet you. I share the president. Many people will tell you that I don't share much with the president, but I do share this. I share a love of Israel, and I share a love of this relationship, and the vast importance of it, and the great hope. And by the way, the great hope of everybody in the Middle East. That you are able to raise a family and maximize your kids' lives, and maybe they have it a little better than you. Because when all you hear about is terrorism and bad folks, that is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the truth life in the Middle East as well. So I hope you enjoy Chicago as much as you sound like you're enjoying.
Thank you so much. It's an honor being here at WGN. It's an honor serving here as the Israeli Consul General. And thank you so much for having us. Really appreciate it. Come visit us in Israel, because you're right. Israel is totally not about the conflict.
We encourage everybody to go visit, Steve. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's spiritual. It's everything. And the food. Out of this world.
God bless.
And the clubs in Tel Aviv. Hello. Can't tell those stories.
Shalom, everybody.
Shalom. The Council General of Israel to the Midwest, Aviv Ezra, back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.